Smith, Dr. John Smith.
I see. What a wonderful butler. He's so violent.
Will he remember any of that?
Scrambled his memory. Gave him a big old dream about being Dan the Soldier Man.
I shall miss him. Yes, I shall miss him.
As from this moment, there's no such thing as free will in the entire universe. There's only my will because I possess the key to time.
Doctor.
You will obey me.
Unimaginable power, unlimited rice pudding.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
I was taken out of time for another reason. And I have every intention of finding out what it is.
They're human beings, if that's what you mean. Indulging their favorite pastime of trying to destroy each other.
Who are you?
Perhaps if we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
Look.
Exquisite. Absolutely exquisite.
Welcome to the Who's On podcast. I'm Barry, joined by Rob and Dan. We're the most gleeful podcast in the Who universe. We have been taken into the fold of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance, which is really cool.
It is very cool, actually. I was looking today at the... I was looking at our statistics today, now that I can find the right word. And it's neat. We've actually gotten a bunch of hits. We got one from Australia that I noticed within the last couple days. There's been at least four, I think, unique hits from the UK since the, you know, being listed on the Podcast Alliance. And
I even saw Turkey.
Yeah, there was one Facebook. From Turkey. Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's really cool. I think it's helped us get some more exposure, which is obviously a cool thing. Not because we need to be famous, but just because it's just neat to know that other people have been at least interested enough to click play.
Yeah, and we've always thought that Stephen Moffat kind of followed us a little bit because he's taken some things to heart.
Apparently.
Yeah, and he's known as Steve to you.
Exactly. Good old Steve there. Stevie M. He doesn't like me calling him that on the air, though. So.
All right. So we got another...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Informal. We got another Steve writer this week, Steve Thompson, and he wrote what, Dan?
He wrote the Curse of the Black Spot and... Wow, and I knew this too, and I just really forgot it.
The Lodger?
No.
That's the one from this
the next episode.
Yeah, that one.
I can't believe it.
That's okay. So he wrote Time Heist along with Stephen Moffat, because Moffat has to make sure that the arc of the entire story. The wonderful and blissful Stephen Moffat.
Yes. The great.
Yeah, the great.
Stevie M. I mean, Stephen Moffat.
Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
That's right.
Yeah, now, you remember the Curse of the Black Spot was fraught with plot holes, where actually one person who was supposedly affected by the Black Spot completely disappeared during the episode.
Yeah.
One of the antagonists. And
which may have been a deleted scene, for all we know, because I don't think we ever found out. But
this one, I didn't know how to react to this. See, I come from more of a fantasy background than sci-fi. Doctor Who is really my only exception that, for the life of me, since I was a kid, I watched Doctor Who. But every time I try to get into other kind of sci-fi, maybe John Barnes, I've read a few books of his that I liked, Robert Heinlein, of course, but I'm really not, and this is a very heavy sci-fi episode.
Yeah.
So I'll temper my reaction with your reaction, Rob, who... is a huge sci-fi fan.
Yeah.
And Dan's reaction. So go for it. What did you think of the episode?
I thought it was fun. I think I would have... I don't know. I guess I'll just say it was another Doctor Who episode. There wasn't anything that blew me away, but it also wasn't one that I feel the need to pick apart. Like, I mean, there's a couple little things that... kind of caught my attention about that. I was like, that doesn't make sense. But it was no worse than a lot of classic Who has been as far as playing with, you know, fact and, you know, kind of stretching what would happen a little bit. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. I'm always kind of into the whole, like, ooh, what's going on? You know, when they kind of play around with it. And they did this, I guess, tastefully enough that, like I said, I didn't feel that I had to pick it apart when I was done watching it.
Did you feel like it was gripping?
I don't know if that's the proper word.
No, I thought it was gripping.
It was enough like those like bank heist movies that they've mm-hmm. done over the last, you know, few years that I guess pretty much like anything, you know, even back to like Ocean's 11, it was enough like those, you know, planning how to do a big bank job that, you know, it was.
Yeah, I thought it had that kind of tempo.
Yeah, I wasn't bored. I'll put it that way. I don't know if I'd say gripped, but I wasn't bored. It was.
I just like saying the word gripping.
Okay.
It was gripping.
Okay.
And what were your emotions going through there, Dan, on this episode?
I believe I was gripped.
Yeah.
Oh.
like Rob said, I found the episode very fun, and I mentioned last week that my expectations were not exceedingly high, so I think I may have ended up enjoying it more because they weren't.
I'm in that boat too.
Yeah, I read the thing where people were saying like, "Oh, it's like a flop of an episode." So I went into it like, "Oh, well, okay."
Yeah, and you were saying it was kind of like a bog standard. It was like, you know, it was a good Doctor Who episode, but nothing really blew me away.
Yeah.
I liked the characterization, the two supporting characters of Sai and her name?
Sabra.
Yeah, Sabra. Was it Sabra or was it
No, Sabra.
Was it Sabra? Okay.
Yeah.
And the villain, I thought, was kind of nice. Keeley Hawes played Miss Delphox.
Yep. The voice.
She had that kind of 80s corrupt businessman type, mm-hmm. you know, like.
Voice of Lara Croft for the last couple games, too, by the way.
Yes, yes, I noticed that when I looked her up.
For the life of me, I thought I knew who this Miss Calibraxis was, mm-hmm. like by her face. And I was like, oh, I know this woman. Who is this mm-hmm. woman? And then it was just only a few days ago while I was working, and it just came to me. She has the face that's almost exactly the same as the actress who played Lucy Butler in the X-Files and Millennium. Very similar face. I don't remember the actress's name who played Lucy Butler. My forum man, Dan, can you look up Lucy Butler for me and tell us the actress's name? It's not relevant to the story of the plot. It's just someone who has a very similar aspect. So who is the architect?
Well, you mean like as far as the end of the episode? Who is the architect? Like is he really? Or
yeah, I was kind of like mystified. Well, not to take mystique.
Mystified. Yeah. Mysterious.
Oh, by
acting like me.
People
now.
Were saying that Sabra was very similar to Mystique or Rogue in a way.
Right.
With the touch and being able to transform into other people. But no, they were talking about the architect guy.
But they told us it was the doctor.
You think it was the doctor? Because I've read reviews where people were saying that it wasn't the doctor.
But he said it was.
Yeah,
he
and I thought, hey, I missed the point somewhere.
He said it was.
And then when I rewatched it, yeah.
He said it was. He said, so look, we have to go and do this job, and so I'm going to have to tell us how to do it,
right.
And I'm going to make us forget what we did so that we could do it.
So Lucy Butler, Dan.
Lucy Butler was played by Sarah Jane Redmond. Apparently, Lucy Butler was also played by a male.
Yes.
Person.
Yeah, she could change in one episode of Millennium, or was it? No, it was the Millennium episode where she was taking high school children with a lot of promise, but not very good grades. People with a lot of heart who were leaders. And she was telling them that they were just normal.
Hmm.
And that she played Paul Marriott's 1968 Love is Blue over and over and over again as a way to drone them out into normalcy.
Right.
It has no lyrics. It's just an instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
A very creepy episode.
Hmm.
And that's who she reminded me of, too. And maybe that's why I thought that her aspect looked similar, too. But
maybe.
One of the... The things, a knock on Stephen Moffat is that a lot of his female characters are sort of like this, I don't know, evil genius dominatrix kind of thing. And they all have the same personality, you know, whether it's Madame Kavarkian or this Miss Calibraxis, River Song even.
Yeah. Yeah, he does tend to write the female characters to be very similar. They're really kind of, yeah. especially anybody who's not the initial companion, they're pretty much the same kind of character. Not initial, primary. That's the word I meant to use.
Right.
But yeah, it's true. I mean, in light of what we find out later in the episode, though, I think Del Fox's character, it started to make more sense eventually. I don't know.
That's my favorite part, when the doctor tells everyone to shut up. You play that audio
shupity
clip.
Shup, shup, shup.
Play the audio clip of him doing that. I think it's classic.
She burns her own clones. Frankly, you're a career break for the right therapist. Shut up. Everybody, just shut up.
And what is this display now, as amusing as you are?
Shut up. Just shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Shut it up, up, up. What? What did you say? What did you say about your own eyes? D, shut up. Say it again.
How can you trust someone if they look back at you out of your own eyes?
I know one thing about the architect. What is it that I know about the architect? I know one thing, something that I have known from the very start.
What?
I hate him. He's overbearing. He's manipulative. He likes to think that he's very clever. I hate him! Clara, don't you see? I hate the architect.
What in the name of sanity is going on in this room now?
We're getting sanity judgment from the self-burner. If I borrow a little bit of paper.
And what are you doing now?
I've given you my telephone number.
Why?
Well, I thought you might like to call me someday. Sorry, I thought we were getting along famously. Am I like misreading the signals or something?
Funny, yes. Dark.
And oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He's so much of, like, the Doctor as, like, I've been missing in the last three, as much as I've loved the last three.
There's
just something so... Exactly. But there's something so crotchety old man about that whole dialogue. Like, that's just so, like, it just... You know, you think about Hartnell.
Yeah, he was given...
Just getting angry at everybody for, like, seemingly no reason.
Giving her his digits.
And that's the whole thing, too, even. When they finally... the reveal of who Karabraxis is.
Right.
And just the same person, but with a totally different way of carrying themselves. I just thought that was really neat.
So,
and we totally skipped the entire episode.
No, but that's, we've heisted it. But
Hey. Yeah. We heisted time. We just jumped ahead.
It seemed that was exactly telling us that the architect was him, and mm-hmm. that's why whenever I was reading stuff online, I was like, wait a second, it's just a bad review that I read, I guess. And I tried to stay away
people
from
people just didn't pay attention is what it comes down to.
But I really, because I don't have a science fiction background, I have more of a fantasy, urban myth, Charles DeLint, Neil Gaiman, Robert Holdstock kind of background, mixed in with philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I was grasping at straws at certain parts because I really liked the episode,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't want it to be something that maybe I hadn't seen and it was a total ripoff. Now, I heard that some people were saying that it was Towering Inferno because there was an architect and there was a fire in some building. It won all these Academy Awards in 1968. I read that somewhere.
Oh.
Did you see any similarities, Dan, to anything that you can think of?
Well, I mean, the character of, again, I forgot her name.
Sabra,
yeah, had elements of the superhero Rogue and Mystique, being someone who couldn't touch other people and also being a shapeshifter. Yeah. But, I mean, that's sort of a basic similarity without actually stealing anything from their characters.
Yeah. No, if anything else, I guess maybe just, too, that she was a mutant, but... They also never explained whether it was, intentional mutation or if it was, just progression.
Yeah, they didn't have a background story to her. It's not like she got bit by a radioactive spider or something
right,
like that.
Right, exactly.
But obviously, she wanted an antidote for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, she didn't consider it a superpower. She considered it a curse.
Yeah.
Because and we don't think of something like that, but some people do have touch issues, not like awkward Sheldon Cooper touch issues or Peter Capaldi touch issues, mm-hmm. but where actual clothing hurts
right.
against the skin yeah. and they can't like actually physically touch someone else. And mm-hmm. how, if you've never touched someone else, how that changes you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was interesting that the thing that she wanted was the ability to be able to touch without changing into that other person.
Right. Right. Yeah.
What would you want, Dan?
Oh, let's see. What would be in the vault?
Yeah.
And what would it be? Every lost episode of Doctor Who.
Wow.
That's very good.
I don't know.
No?
I don't know. $30,000.
That's a low number.
That's all I need.
Yeah. That's not enough. That's just a down payment.
I just got a few bills I want to get rid of.
All right.
I'm simple.
You're not greedy.
I'm simple.
And me, I would. I like Dan's idea, definitely, about the Doctor Who missing episodes. But that's obviously not something that I would risk my life for. And that's what these people were doing.
Well, yeah.
That's true.
I guess in that case, too, yeah, I would. Yeah, same thing. It's not, you know, whatever. Obviously enough, $30,000 isn't a whole lot of money anyway, so it's not really worth risking, you know, all of that over.
Put in the comments on our Facebook page what you would risk your life for, what would be at the end of your vault. We'd appreciate that. Okay, Cy, let's talk about Cy. You're the computer expert, Rob. Mm-hmm. No, so is Dan, actually. Now, these chips in his head,
mm-hmm.
were they from, like, a computer from 1995?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, that's what I thought.
The little, yes and no. The little chip that he pulled out looked like an old read-only memory chip to me.
That's
like
what it
from
did
like
to
a, like an internal PC board and mm-hmm. like an older system.
Right.
But it had some kind of a little display on it, though. Because at the one point when he took it out and it said like memory corrupted or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was advanced, but it was still only like an 8-bit ROM chip.
Yeah.
Which they just kind of, you know, put a piece of tape that they could green screen a display onto. But yeah. That's at least what he pulled out. But at the same time, one of the other pieces, you know, he had some kind of a interface port, like a USB port or something.
Yeah, so he plugged a wire into his head.
Yeah. And it looked like an old, like, 386.
What, Dan?
I found it funny when he was running low on power and he had to plug himself in and he was sort of sitting down plugged in. And I got an image of, like, people in airports recharging their cell phones all kind of gathered around the
outlets.
The recharge stations.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true. That was kind of funny. I thought it was kind of weird, though. I'm like, so what do they call them when they do that? I can't even think now. His alterations, that when that was running low on power, that he started to stutter even, which was weird because the only thing that, well, we don't know all of what he could do with that. So I'll just leave that at that and not really go there.
Well, the doctor kind of inferred that he really didn't need a memory wipe. He could have done it himself and then restored his own backup if he really wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought Cy was a great character.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll play his... well, first play this question.
Cy's question.
Which we can get into.
You okay?
No, I'm an amnesiac rubbing it back. Why would I be okay?
It's a Sabre.
What Sabre is dead, we're alive. Prioritize if you want to stay that way.
Oh, is that why you call yourself the Doctor? The professional detachment.
Listen, when we're done here, by all means, you go and find yourself a shoulder to cry on. You'll probably need that. So then what you need is me.
Underneath it all, he isn't really like that.
It's very obvious that you've been with him for a while.
Why?
Because you were really good at the excuses.
Another gift from the architect shall be unwrapped.
So that was revealing in a lot of ways. First of all, Cy challenged the doctor like Rory did, mm-hmm. Like Ian did, like Barbara did, like a lot of the great companions.
Yep.
And secondly, exposed Clara for... My wife pointed out how... Clara is basically married to an alcoholic, an abusive person, someone who makes excuses for their spouse.
Yeah.
And then when someone else sees it.
Yeah, they make the excuses for why. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's not really that bad.
And he says, I can see you've been with him a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Sai was one of those characters. I was very impressed. Not, you know, not necessarily with what he did with this, but just the potential that the character could actually have had for other things, which at the same time, they didn't write him off that there's no possibility. As it is, the doctor picked, you know, Saber and Sai out from a databank to include them with the heist. So who knows?
Yeah, he hand might chose
show back
them.
Up. Yeah, exactly. Might show back up again for all we know.
And I like the eyes and the numbers that went by when he was reading information.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought was an interesting way of just kind of portraying to us what was going on in his head. Obviously, that probably wouldn't really happen if somebody was modified the way he was. Yeah. But it was augmented. just kind of a neat way to do it. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Augmented. Yes. Probably wouldn't actually see that happen if somebody actually had that kind of a thing going on, but it was a lot better than the idea of him just standing there staring off into space.
And it's actually a really interesting backstory is how he had to wipe memories of people that he loved because of the things that he was involved mm-hmm. in. So he's yep. every... And then I want you to play his sacrifice here because he takes on the... he says, I'm every bank robber in...
Yeah,
in the universe here, and it's interesting who they show. Who do they show, Dan?
Oh, I have this thing pulled up here. They show Sensorite from the William Hartnell story, The Sensorites, a Terroleptal from the 1982 Visitation, a Slitheen, an Ice Warrior, the Gunslinger from A Town Called Mercy, Captain John Hart from Torchwood, which was Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep.
Andrevax and the Trickster, they were from the Sarah Jane Adventures, so I wasn't familiar with them. And I like the inclusion of Absalom Dak from the Doctor Who comics. He was called Absalom Dak Dalek Killer, and he had his own kind of... side comic set in the Doctor Who universe where he went around destroying all the Daleks. Hmm.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
But essentially made him canon, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you'll play his sacrifice, a very important scene.
Yeah.
Every famous burglar in history is hiding in this bank right now in one body. Come on, feast! Clara, for what it's worth, and it might not be worth much, when your whole life flashes in front of you, you see people you love, and people missing you. And I see no one.
Wow, so I'm sorry for the volume going up on it.
But, yeah.
And again, another companion that has to sacrifice himself. Although we learn later what we kind of figured out anyway, that he says there were six vials, six of these
right.
exit strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Why were there six when there was only four of us?
Right. Yep. Yeah, the one thing that was kind of weird about that whole quote with Sai's sacrifice was how he says all of these criminals are here now. And I'm like, wait, so he has their genetic imprint? Or is he just saying because he's picturing them and he knows their history?
I think he has the knowledge of each job that they were on.
Yeah, so, but which is funny, though, because if the teller tells guilt, he wouldn't feel guilt for the crimes of others.
No, well, he didn't.
But then how did the teller...
He's shouting it out that he's... Oh, that's a good... Yeah.
Not that I'm trying to point out a very big glaring plot hole or anything, but, you know.
Pothole?
Yep. Well, that maybe, I would...
maybe it was indirectly he was not so much channeling their guilt, but maybe the idea of, like, their crimes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Maybe it was just... Like a
juicier.
Yeah, a juicy morsel of meat. Like, hey, over here, don't look at Clara.
Well, noisier.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. You know, that's what's kind of funny, which we sort of find out a little bit later, that the teller isn't really just telling guilt either, though. You know, it's more just that he senses, right, like, thoughts and
information.
They told him to behave a certain way based on a certain kind of
thought. Yeah, because Miss Calabraxis, or the Miss Delphi, the clone, mm-hmm. She says, oh, we'll figure out the backstory later, after they make the guy soup.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, play that, the tears. That was a weird, and it started out very dark in that way. Those aren't tears.
We've got to help him.
It's gone already. It's over.
He's in agony. Look at him.
Those aren't tears, Clara. That's soup.
And that was... Now, I've seen the head thing before, and I just can't place it. Where, I mean, you had mentioned privately that, you know, obviously the skull would still be intact if the brain got leaked out.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, you know, the brain tissue isn't what's holding the shape of your head, but...
Or maybe the fact that, you know, the soup was coming from his eyes, you know, his brain was kind of being sucked out, and the suction caused the skull to collapse.
It's possible.
It's sort of a nasty thing to say, really.
Yeah. No, but it's true. You know, if you think about, you know, the fact that the brain is only made up by plates anyway, or not the brain, excuse me. The skull is only made up by plates of bone. It's not a solid piece of bone either. So I guess there is a possibility, depending on how exactly it was happening, you know, that could happen.
Yeah, because it's kind of stitched in a Y shape at the back of the skull. So eventually we get to the solar storm interfering. And that was, so then that's when the doctor figured out that, hey, this is a time traveler who knows exactly when this is going to happen. So everything is perfectly set up for when they have to land.
Right, because they have to know exactly when the DeLorean is going to drive past the clock tower.
Exactly. Very poignant.
Absolutely. Look, if he's going to pick up this many little things that he's borrowing from other stories, we got to call him on them.
No, I didn't even think of that. That's.
But it's just that it's the same kind of thing. To backtrack a little bit, one thing that I thought was kind of strange, the whole the bomb in the room with the safety deposit box, if you will. The doctor talks about how it moved a portion of the floor to a different plane. Yet, that created debris around the outside of the area that was shifted. But then when he unset the bomb or whatever, brought it back, it fixed all that. So
I didn't see it bring debris.
There was debris around the outside of the hole.
Oh, really?
Which I guess the idea is just that if there was another plane where a bomb did go off, then, you know, that plane would... Oh, it was a temporal shift. Aha, I get it now. Never mind. Okay, I'm done. I'm saying that that there was another point in time, either later or earlier, where the doctor had blown a hole in the floor. That's how he got in there, because we already know he already broke into it.
I see where you see.
So he's using the whole, you know, time temporal shift thing to
around,
only
Rob.
Shift a portion of time and space, so that he could shift the time where the floor has a hole blown into it to where they were, without having to actually blow it up while they're in there.
You're such a deep thinker. Sometimes
that's why I just stopped talking. I'm just going to leave that alone there.
No, that's very important. We do have a thing for the point of the robbery, for the bomb going off, and I love that their team not dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
What if the plan is we're blowing up the floor for someone else? What if we're not supposed to make it out alive?
Oh, don't be so pessimistic. It'll affect team morale.
What, and getting us blown up won't?
Only very, very briefly.
No way. You can do what you like. I'm going to take my chances out there.
Si!
No, this guy, your mate, is a lunatic.
What do you want, Si? More than anything else. Whatever it is, it's in this bank. You agreed to rob the most impregnable bank in history. You must have had a very good reason.
I don't like the word impregnable.
Yeah, it's like unsinkable.
What's wrong with unsinkable? Well, said the iceberg to the Titanic.
Bloop,
glub, glub, glub.
Tom Baker.
Yep. It's very, very Tom Baker reference, very heavy, like, in this season. Especially Robot, I mean, because that's also from Robot.
Yeah. That's from Robot.
So, just kind of an interesting little tidbit there.
Oh, and we have a conversation between Sabra and the Doctor that can't go unmentioned. So if you'll play that audio clip for us, we'll discuss that, because I need a refresher on that too.
Aren't you going to ask me?
Why did you lie? Those hypo things, you know what they are.
Exit strategy of sorts. How did you know I was lying?
I've had a lot of faces. I find them easy to read.
Quite a gift.
Gift?
God isn't here.
Mutant gene. No one can touch me. If they do, I transform. Touch me, Doctor, and you'll be looking at yourself. I am alone.
Why?
Could you trust someone who looked back at you out of your own eyes?
And it reminded me of the David Tennant lonely doctor kind of thing. That's, she feels the same way as he's felt for
a long time.
How long? Yeah. And it was almost as if she was, she was speaking to him, but on a deeper level.
Right.
Thoughts on that, Dan?
No, I pretty much agree exactly with what you said on that. And in fact, until you played the clip back, I kind of took it at the face value. I usually pick up on stuff like that. I didn't pick up, you know, that she was not only talking about herself, but him. And I was kind of thinking to myself, it's like, yeah, I usually noticed that. Mm-hmm. For some reason I missed that.
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny that, like, you know, in light of the whole episode, how, you almost, if Sabre almost kind of remembered a little bit about what happened to the fact that she, like, you know, that she would say, you know, if you were to look at yourself and, you know, talk to yourself with your own eyes, you know, look at, you know, make eye contact with yourself, how you wouldn't believe it. And it loops around to being that the Doctor is the architect and he hid his eyes so that, you know, he wouldn't be able to look at himself. And
also, it seems that during this season, it's a constant theme where he's looking at himself and wondering who he is. Is he a good man? And she actually said that he was a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice to meet one. Yeah.
Yeah, and right before I die, of course, is when I meet one good man.
Yeah.
So it's a constant theme, and I think that's where Moffat has his hand in the writing process.
Right.
Where there's that continuity throughout
the
season. Mm-hmm. Then we get to the end. I do want to mention this episode is sort of bookended by Clara's date and with the whole conversation about her heels. Oh, were you going to, you need this to reach a big shelf?
Yeah. What's so important about a shelf?
And then to Capaldi at the end of the episode saying, you know, try to beat that, you know, kind of thing, yeah. A bank heist.
Yeah, how's that for a date?
Right. And almost one-upping Danny Pink, which I thought was like the only detraction from the episode for me, really, because I really did enjoy the episode, even though half the time I didn't know what was going on. But that was kind of the point of the episode. You're supposed to mystery, and the tempo was really good. So you just, it had enough story for it to breathe, and yet there was some character development. Mm-hmm. I think Clara played an okay role in this. She wasn't.
She wasn't as prominent.
Yeah, I think that's the thing.
I think it was more focused on the Doctor. The Doctor seemed to have more to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because his special talent was being a leader, you know, because of the eyebrows and all that.
Basically, it's the eyebrows.
Yeah. I did think the whole conversation with the date was pretty funny, though, at the beginning, too. With it, why is your face so colored in? Just absolutely picking on her so much. Like,
he's like, look at me. Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah, completely oblivious to what's going on. It's the Doctor. That's all.
And I agree with Barry. Like, when he, you know, kind of, there was like a bit of jealousy there.
Yeah, yeah.
And in one way, I didn't like it. But then I was thinking about it, and it was almost like The doctor, yeah, it's not a competition, but it would be me kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
With Robin Hood, and I was getting the doctor. The doctor's jealousy is more like she's like seeing someone, and he's imagining that it's probably someone like him, and that's where the jealousy, like she's replacing him with someone else. Yeah. Even John Pertwee, when Joe Grant was leaving at the end of The Green Death, we talked about that in our the previous podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
He was interfering with Joe's romance.
Yeah, no, he was very, yeah, exactly. He was interfering. He was very forlorn when he finally said goodbye, you know. Yep. Yeah, it's probably the same kind of thing. It's just, yeah, he's more familiar with losing companions to just, you know, either death or just straight up leaving on their own, but not that he's being replaced by somebody else. So,
well, and Green Death is very similar in a lot of ways too, because in the episode The Green Death is mentioned how the doctor and the scientist were so similar. Mm-hmm. She was like a young doctor. This is what Joe Grant said to him.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of you.
And so there was, because John Pertwee always had sort of a fatherly kind of relationship with Joe Grant. So she was finding someone of her own age, of her own time, of her own planet, who was as similar as possible to the doctor. And so at the end of it, when he's wishing them goodbye, he just downs the drink and goes out to Bessie, his car.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things here, the teller. I want to talk about the teller because it's an interesting character. You got the impression, because it's all chained up, that why is it doing this? There has to be a reason why it's chained up. It could obviously, I mean, if it put its power on Miss Calibraxis, if it was really wanted its own freedom and make her mind soup.
Right.
Why wasn't it doing that? So that question was in my head. And then I think number 8 on the audio answers some of that. Were the doctors asking some of those questions?
If you're thinking of ways to escape, the teller will know before you've even made a move. You'll never be bothered by all that thinking again.
Useful species.
Last of its kind. And we've signed an exclusive deal.
Must be noisy inside its head. Painful to listen to so much chatter, so many secrets. Must drive it wild. How can you force it to obey?
Oh, everything has a price tag, I think you'll find.
Which I thought was very just because I was thinking about it, and then when that actual scene happened, I was like, oh, thank you. This is going somewhere. This is really cool. And it did it in the right tempo, too. I'm not detracting from the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought there was. At first, I figured the character from the commercials, ad spots, whatever. I had assumed that it was a criminal, that you know, like they kept there to be kind of like
it's a orange, like a prisoner.
Exactly, the orange got like a straitjacket kind of deal going on. Yeah, I did kind of figured it was going that way.
Yeah, it was like Sasquatch.
Yeah, yeah,
big and huge and.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I thought it was really neat. I don't remember the actor's name, but apparently another Game of Thrones crossover. Apparently he is the White Walker. I've never seen Game of Thrones, so
I
don't know. And I believe he also played a jockey in Prometheus.
Wow. A jockey?
Yeah.
So he would have to be really short then.
No. Space jockey, like aliens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, huge.
Not a horse jockey.
Yeah. No, not horse jockey. Space jockey.
Not like Mickey Rooney or somebody.
Yeah, no. But, yeah, and there was some other stuff, too, that he did. I was kind of surprised. I went and I looked through his listing a little bit on IMDb, and I was like, wow, he's out there a lot. But I don't recall what else it was.
I find that interesting because I didn't think to look it up. Almost like I think it was so well realized that I wasn't even thinking it was an actor, you know, because I knew it was animatronics rather than CGI, and I thought it was cool. But I thought, you know, it's an actual creature, you know.
Yeah, no, it was actually one of the as far as the Doctor Who aliens go, it was actually one of the more just believable ones. Just, I mean, not as much at the end. I think once they showed the two of them walking, you could kind of see how much of a costume it was, but.
Yeah.
But as far as being in the, you know, in the straitjacket and everything, right. And just the way that the mouth moved and the way the eye stalks, if you will,
yeah.
The way they moved, I thought was really good. You know, even with it like blinking, you could kind of see how the eyeball retracted and stuff.
I thought it was really clever that the writer actually closed up the hole of why couldn't that we just go through the TARDIS to do all this too. And he said that the solar interference wouldn't make the landing a pinpoint kind of thing. And that's what he needed for this.
Yep. Yep.
So I was very happy. Yeah, that explained that hole it. It wasn't just, up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty neat too, just in general, the way they, the explanation for the heist eventually. I just, you know, I don't know if we're ready to go there yet, but.
No, yeah.
Just the whole point was just, was awesome. Just that the time, well, I mean, we already played the clip where he gives Carabraxis his phone number, so.
Right. I did want to talk about that briefly too, because he says one day you're, play number 10 on the audio.
You'll be dead.
Yeah, you'll be old. We'll get on famously. You'll be old and full of regret for the things that you can't change.
And I think that's a common theme through almost every life, everywhere, and definitely the Doctor. And so he was naming it, and he was saying, hey, listen, here's the paper. Here's my digits. I'm a time traveler. You're going to need me at some point because there's obviously something here going on that is not right.
Yeah, and I think it's neat because, like, the... Since it led up to, you know, leading up to that was the whole shuppity up, you know, thing.
Yeah, he was trying to understand, not remember. He wanted to understand.
Right. And I thought it was really cool how the Doctor kind of, like, put together that it's me, but he didn't know what was going on exactly yet. But it was, you know, he put it together enough to know to do that. And I thought that was really cool. This was the way they thought out the whole process of, like, the whole playing with when things were happening. I just thought they, you know, they actually did a really good job at laying the science fiction part of this out, I thought. The whole time travel and, you know, going back in time and setting it up, and I just thought it was done really well.
And like Dan said, because it was Steve Thompson, and I was very disappointed with the mark of the black spot, which I thought was a fun episode, but there was just so many plot holes in it, it kind of let me down a little. I like the fact that Rory liked someone other than Amy in that episode because it made Amy frustrated, which was an interesting take. So I had the benefit of low expectations as well, especially since Listen was so awesome.
Yeah.
So I was really, I think that coupled with just its originality in story and the way that everything worked out, were it being a love story, sort of like Hyde was a love story between monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our version of monsters, what we would think as monsters. Yeah. I think it was really a fun, and yet had that mystery, had that tempo, and it was a, I will go out on a limb, 5 out of 5 TARDISes for me 2 weeks in a row.
Okay.
Well, maybe 3 even. Robot Assure would I just love because it brought a smile to my, I don't know. But I know that there was some things, but I love Mark Gatiss, so I 4.8 TARDISes for that one.
Well, you know.
I say this is probably my favorite Steve Thompson episode he's written for Doctor Who. Now, I've liked the stuff he did for Sherlock. I haven't seen anything else that he's written, but I felt that he was strong and strong. So I knew he had, you know, good story writing ability. And I just kind of felt that the stuff he had done for Doctor Who, like I said, like Curse of the Black Spot and also Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, there was a sense of fun to the episodes, but I didn't feel there was really any depth to them.
Yeah.
He tried. He tried when Clara and the Doctor, Clara remembered things when they were in close to the eye.
And I think maybe my expectations for Journey to the Center of the TARDIS was very high because we were going to get to see the inside of the TARDIS,
right.
You know, we really haven't seen much of that in the new series.
Yeah, I know I was up really excited
because,
for that one.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Eventually we'll have another one where there's like this Sontaran invasion and the Tom Baker episode where the entire thing is in the TARDIS again. But we're probably going to have a few seasons without one just because we had Journey to the Center of the TARDIS as well, which is fine. As part as the fifth episode in season 8, there's a nice transition to get more sci-fi. And it looks like apparently he's going to go back to Coal Hill School and more 20th or 21st. I keep forgetting it's 21st century now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so used to the 20th, I guess. But he'll be looks like a custodian or at some point. And if Clara just gets out of the way and lets him finish and do his job, everything will be fine. You know, which is unfortunate for Clara, what we've wanted for.
yeah, kind of. But, you know. Plus, too, I don't know yet if it's that he's trying to investigate something going on at the school or if he's investigating her and who she's been dating. Because he does kind of keep inquiring about who she's dating.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah, he is sort of a...
He's kind of being a nosy...
Well, that's a little creepy doctor stuff going on.
Again, like the whole investigating thing, I'm getting strong vibes of the Lodger because, you know, he was doing that.
Right, right.
Trying to pass off as a regular person.
Mm-hmm.
Failing miserably.
Hey, maybe the doctor's the guy with the job in the shop.
Maybe.
Matt Smith had a job in a shop, right? And during that was that episode, The Lodger, that he had that? Oh, no, that was Closing Time.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one with Craig.
Yeah.
Stormageddon.
Which also written by Gareth Roberts. So again, you know, we're getting like Gareth Roberts vibes.
Yeah, yeah. There are themes that certain writers carry over, so...
And this is the third episode in a row without Missy in it, which is good. I'm not really sold on the whole Missy idea anyway. And so it's good that
she's not being overused.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Plus, there's only so much enigmatic, you know, someone dies and then she's there and offers some tea that you can do, you know, weekly.
It's true.
I mean, she did it twice just to show that she's not just a one-off thing, that, you know, that she's going to be important. But now they kind of left her. They made references to her. They made it like, you know, woman in the shop reference about having the phone number.
Yep.
And the robots of Sherwood, the doctor mentioned, like, the ship was going to the Promised Land. The doctor mentioned Promised Land again.
Yeah, Promised Land again, yep. Mm. And even in this, though, didn't he made a point about the – wasn't this the episode where he – before the phone even rang? That he was talking to Claire and he said, oh, well, you got my phone number somehow.
Yeah, talking about the woman in the shop.
Oh, yeah, the woman in the shop gave you my phone number. So, you know, like, there may be a little bit of a tie-in with that as well.
Oh, my goodness. We didn't even just play the first clip is, like, it's the clip that hooked me into the whole episode. Play the first clip.
Because we played it beforehand, so, we kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a phone, Clara. Nothing happens when you answer the phone.
I die laughing at
it. It is funny. I remember when I first, like, when we saw it, I was just like, I love the way he says, it's just a phone, Clara. It's just so Scottish.
And that they're holding the, and I said, a memory worm.
Yeah, right away, that's what I said. I thought it, as soon as they showed it, I was like, oh, man, I know what that is.
And now number 11. This is our last audio clip. This is about, have a good listen and a laugh.
Go and enjoy yourself. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
This is a date. Yeah. I've just realized I'm going out for another meal now.
Don't worry. Calories consumed on the TARDIS have no lasting effect.
What? Are you kidding?
Of course I'm kidding. It's a time machine, not a medical worker.
Yes.
The doctor's sense of humor. And he's doing the doctor so well.
What's the thing? He's got the Tom Baker sarcasm, you know, just totally telling people what they want to hear and then being like, I'm just kidding.
Or even the smile I was mentioning before we went on, that he gets all big-eyed and then gets this big toothy grin.
Yep.
So much like Tom Baker did.
Uh-huh. It's a little creepier when he does it, though.
Yeah, it is. It is, because it's a little more insane, I think.
Yeah, I think Peter Capaldi's kind of got that crazy grandpa kind of look to it, whereas Tom Baker was just like, oh.
And definitely Alien.
Yes, yeah.
Too, and that's one of the things that Tom Baker sold so well, was that he walks in the fifth dimension. He's not like you.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. He had a respect for the role of being a Time Lord, I think, that not as many people got as well.
Until next time, folks, have a good one.